We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
9:39, 21 before 9, we will all remember where we were on this date 18 years ago. And David Schanzer joins us now, director of the Triangle Center of Terrorism and Homeland Security at Duke University. And we wanted to talk to David, our friend, about then and now and what's changed in terms of likelihood of attack and so forth. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy.
I appreciate your time. Let's start with, so many myths have evolved since 9/11 about the hijackers, how they got into the country, et cetera. Where did they come from, nations of origin, and how did they get into the country?
Well, the 9/11 attacks were perpetrated by Al-Qaeda. It was not an inside job. There's no evidence. There's nobody who knows anything about this attack that actually believes that. Most of the hijackers, almost all of them, were Saudi. Some they got in on visas, most of which were fraudulently obtained. They did not sneak through the borders of either U.S. and Mexico or Canada. They were in the country, most of them illegally, because their visa applications were fraudulent, but they came here through the normal channels. Matter of fact, some of them came and left during the months prior to the attacks themselves.
Let's talk about the intelligence failing, and I want to compare and contrast that with where we are now. The FBI, CIA, NSA, they had all, in one way or the other, suspected these people or had something on them. How did all of that play out, David?
Well, it's a complicated story, but the bottom line is that some of our intelligence agencies did know that there were Al-Qaeda operatives that had come into the United States. And that information did not get to the people in the FBI in a timely and effective way such that they could take action against those individuals, start conducting surveillance and so on in a way that might, and I emphasize might, have prevented the attack. So that led to an understanding that the coordination between our intelligence agencies and our domestic agency with the FBI, which is both a domestic law enforcement agency and an intelligence collection agency inside the U.S., were not effective. And we've created new agencies, we've created new procedures, policies, we've created new technology in order to bridge those gaps and make sure information flowed much more effectively between all the different elements of our government. And I think that's an incomplete endeavor, but it's one of the, success stories so far of the post 9/11 era.
Was this primarily, Dave, and I never did really get a definitive answer, whether it was about territorialism, protecting their own turf, or was it just a bad system in place?
It was a couple things. It was culture, it was law, it was some misunderstanding of the law that led to ideas that certain information couldn't be shared when actually it really could be. Certainly a culture of protecting sources and methods, a worry that your intelligence, ability to collect intelligence would be compromised if it was allowed to get to too many people who were doing other things in the government. There are technological problems. So it was a variety of things, and we've had to therefore address that intelligence sharing problem in a variety of fashions, like I just mentioned.
Were these, I forget exactly how many hijackers they had, 14?
19 hijackers.
Were these just 19 people that, and with help of course, but exploited a weakness, hurt us as badly as they possibly could? And I guess with that being said, could anything like that happen today?
Well, of course, you could play poker tonight, and you could draw a royal flush. So there's always possibilities, and I think, you know, in many ways that's what happened, in that they had a very sophisticated plan. Many things could have gone wrong and didn't. They got lucky, but as is often said in this business, the terrorists only need to get lucky once, and the government and everybody trying to stop them needs to, you know, be effective 100% of the time, or else sometime, you know, we feel like we failed. So we have, I think, increased the difficulty of executing these large-scale attacks. Our intelligence is much, much better. We have much more insight into who is coming into the country through, you know, border security, visa procedures. We do a lot more at our airports with screening, a lot more international cooperation, a lot more sharing intelligence with our partners. So the whole world has been focused much more effectively on this problem. So it's definitely much, much harder to do this kind of attack, but I would never say that it could never be done, because, as I said, you can get lucky, and there's no doubt that there are elements that are continuing to plan and try to do these kinds of things all the time.
And not only is it the 18th anniversary of 9/11, but it's the 18th year of the war in Afghanistan, not against Afghanistan. We also got sidetracked into Iraq. From the beginning, was Iraq ever thought to be complicit in this, or was it always Afghanistan, and then somehow the story got changed?
Well,
as far as the 9/11 attacks,
the organization, the people that attacked us were located in Afghanistan, and there's no dispute about that. Were there some individuals who shared this ideology, like Zarqawi, who had this ideology and might have had some sort of tangential connection, who were living in Iraq? Yes, that's true. But I think that was hardly a sufficient basis for a regime change and a mass war against Saddam Hussein. That's a very complicated discussion, but I think we went into Iraq for many variety of reasons, but very few of which can legitimately be tied to the 9/11 attack.
So now Afghanistan, the Taliban in the news about negotiating some type of, I don't know how you can negotiate with the Taliban, but let me start at that point. David, is that possible? I mean, you got pictures of the Taliban with people that are wearing masks on their face because they don't want to be identified. Who comes into whatever it is, any type of negotiation, and how do you know they're not going to be wearing a mask on their face, killing somebody the next day?
Well, you're absolutely right about that, and I've had a lot of misgivings. I mean, in the end, terrorist movements do end, insurgencies do end, and they post-conflict stability ultimately can be achieved. We saw, let's say, the war in Yugoslavia between, you know, some very savage adversaries, a peace process of sort, negotiated settlement that had to be guaranteed by the United States. And, of course, we still have troops in the Balkans that are in a peacekeeping function. So these things can end when people decide that it's better to try to maybe share power or have a more decent society than to continue to fight. I'm under no illusion that I don't think the Taliban has come to that point. And I think the fact that they are not really willing to engage in real negotiations with an Afghan government about, you know, a post-U.S. Afghanistan and how power could be shared and how we could have a stable, peaceful situation with the Taliban as a partner. Those discussions haven't happened. What we've been talking about is an agreement between the Taliban and the U.S. for the U.S. to leave. And frankly, I don't see any reason to trust the Taliban to keep up with its side of the bargain at all.
Is it accurate to say we've been at war for 18 years? Because I don't know, did we ever, and I'm not in any way diminishing the sacrifices that the men and women have made. I'm just asking about the term itself, because it seems as though we didn't go to war with Afghanistan. We went to war with Al-Qaeda, I guess. Is that what happened, David? And then where does that stand right now?
Well, the Taliban, although the Taliban government wasn't recognized by almost every country in the world as the legitimate government of Afghanistan, it was running Afghanistan, and it was in a state of civil war with parts of Afghanistan in 2001. And we certainly went to war with the Taliban government because they were providing safe harbor and shelter to Al-Qaeda. You'll recall President Bush said in his famous speech to Congress on September 20, he said to the Taliban, turn over bin Laden. We demand that you turn over bin Laden. They refused. Had they turned over bin Laden, who knows what the course of history would have been. There wouldn't have been a reason for us to have necessarily done regime change in Afghanistan. But when they wouldn't, I think we rightly decided to invade and execute regime change so that we could then rid Afghanistan of Al-Qaeda and then try to get
bin Laden, which we did
execute that effectively. Most of them escaped to Pakistan, as we know, and that kept going, and that leads us to where we are still today. But what we have is a very, we have a government that we've helped support now for 18 years. We have an insurgency by the Taliban trying to topple that government. And we have both Al-Qaeda and ISIS operatives who are, very eager to take advantage of any sort of vacuum in governance in Afghanistan to reconstitute themselves and continue their, nefarious activities.
Let's take a break. We'll see what's going on here. 9:50, 10 till
Hello?
10. David, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back talking to David Shanzer about 9/11. And we all remember where we were on this date at this time 18 years ago. Back in a flash, WWL.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.